power glove.
Welcome to Pixel Dreams.
Yep. Oh, it's not Pixel Dreams this week.
Oh, what is it?
We're not talking about pixels this week. We're talking about peripherals.
Peripherals?
Peripherals?
No.
Peripheral memories. We're gonna talk about our childhood today.
Yes, as Eric
unlike every other show.
Yeah. We're gonna be talking about peripherals. Especially the early 90s peripherals. Mm-hmm. Now, this was a time when peripherals were very prevalent.
Yeah, we've talked about this a lot before with the, you know, the level of consumer knowledge that we had back then. It wasn't so great. So we're going to talk about some good peripherals. Mm-hmm. We're also going to talk about a lot of bad ones because there's definitely more bad than good when you're talking about peripherals, especially early on.
I feel like the good ones pretty much everyone knows about, but it's the bad ones that are really interesting. But, you know, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves.
No, we have a lot of news to cover here.
Last week was a big week, E3. It came again, right on schedule. Mm-hmm.
And it dropped so many bombs on us. I'm still recovering. I've got burns.
Yeah. So apparently we are going controllerless. That seems to be the wave of the future now, with a Kinect being announced.
Which is interesting because we're talking about peripherals, and for how long did all these companies try to get rid of controllers?
Exactly.
I mean, we've been trying to get rid of controllers since Atari.
that's been the dream, really.
Right. So, I don't know why, because I'm very happy pushing my buttons and my D-pad and joystick. But
if you haven't heard, the Kinect is it's actually Microsoft Project Natal. They decided to name it the Kinect. K-I-N-E-C-T, you know, it's pretty clever, right? Yeah, like kinetic energy, yeah.
Is this Sega developed?
It sounds like it, and honestly, I watched the demo, like this little commercial. It reminded me a lot of the Wii commercials where you had, like, the whole family around the television set, you know, dad's playing baseball, the kids are, you know, doing the Dance Dance Revolution thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just ridiculous. Right. Like, it's so, the commercial is so cheesy, I really, really recommend you see it.
Because your mom and dad, they don't know how to press A and B and up and down. That's way too confusing, but they know how to move their hands around willy-nilly.
Yeah. It is interesting, though. I mean, like, obviously, the commercial, that's really what it felt like. But that was probably staged. It probably wasn't real interaction.
Well, you know, I remember the early Wii commercials with Wii Sports.
Yeah.
Where they were making it look far more interactive than it actually was.
Right. But if you don't know what the Kinect is, it's a little thing, a little doodad you put on the top of your TV.
Looks like a TiVo or something.
Yeah,
kind of.
It's like basically like a camera that records your movements. Microsoft claims that the Kinect will be able to recognize facial patterns and emotion.
Oh, really?
Because there's a game, Milo and something, I forget. It's being made by Peter Molyneux, though. And, yeah, of course, the infamous Fable Master, Peter Molyneux. But, yeah, this game is interesting to me because it's basically just a little kid as a friend in a video game. Like, you know, you just kind of talk to this guy, see what's up. I think it's actually called Milo and Kate.
Okay.
But yeah, you just talk to him.
Right.
Tell him
about your day. You know,
yeah.
your hard work in the 40 hours a week in the salt mines or whatever.
Yeah. You can like hold up little pictures to the camera and he'll comment on them. It's just so ridiculous. Like, how are these games don't even look fun?
No.
I'm sorry. I do not want to be standing up in my living room, move my arms around like an idiot. Like, I just don't.
Yeah, and I'm going to talk about this more when we get into the peripherals later. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I can understand in some ways. You know, there's good applications of this. Like, Wii Fit, It's not my bag, but I can understand why there's a place for that. You know, exercising while you're playing games and that sort of thing. But I don't want to play standard games like that.
Yeah, well,
I just don't.
I mean, one of the good things, I guess, about this is that it's an all-in-one, all-encompassing peripheral.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the Wii, they have, oh my god, there's so many fucking add-ons for the Wii. Mm-hmm. You know, the Wii Fit, like, they have, like, what, basically, like, Warify Power Pad, right?
Right.
Something like that. Wii Driving. that's the best.
The plastic Wii steering wheel.
No. I'm talking about the peripheral where you can play the Wii in your car.
Oh, yeah. Because
that's a great idea.
Very necessary.
Yeah.
For our times. My favorite Wii add-ons are, like, where you put, like, a plastic sword on the top of your Wiimote so it looks like a sword. Well, it doesn't really add anything to the game, but come on. You're a little kid. You want a little plastic sword on your
Dude, I'm not going to play Red Seal 2 with just the Wiimote. What do I look like?
I want a katana with some cool kanji on the blade.
Yeah. Well, actually, Wii is also, they're updating their technology. It's they're now using the Wii Motion Plus.
Right.
Which is just, it can sense more complex movements, you know. Basically, that's really pretty much it.
Right. It's just them admitting that the Wii technology wasn't the best when it first came out. You need to update it now.
Yeah, but there wasn't only bad news at E3. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
In Nintendo's press conference, we found out that our beloved first-person shooter that could from 1997, mm-hmm. GoldenEye.
Yep, the game that started it all. You could blame this for Halo and everything else that came after, really.
On the console, at least. Yeah. But no, they are making a new version of GoldenEye 007. Right.
And just, you know, to illuminate the powerful nature of this announcement, I mean, I remember when I was, I was a teenager around N64 era, some people just called N64 Bond.
Yeah.
I remember. You want to play Bond? They just had one game for it, GoldenEye, because that's all they played.
Yeah.
Just like Halo when the Xbox originally came out.
It's interesting to look on it, look back on it now, because, you know, I used to have GoldenEye. I was never, you know, one of these diehard fans who would, you know, just stay up till 3 in the morning playing it with their buddies, but I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's interesting, though, the developer they have chosen for this.
Oh, man. Yeah, Well, I guess, you know, good news that GoldenEye is being remade, but just like all these other remakes, now we got to be cynical about it, because not only is it being remade, but, for instance, James Bond now, not Pierce Brosnan anymore, it's Daniel Craig.
Oh, of course.
He's in the game.
Well,
and
he
voices Bond in the game as well.
Well, I want to be clear, this isn't a remake. This is a totally new experience that's supposed to be faithful to the original GoldenEye.
Yeah, they're
now,
not
it probably
really,
won't. It probably won't.
They're not really being very forthright, I have to say, and how much is being actually remade and all that. They're trying to say that they're, you know, sticking true to the original game, but at the same time, oh, there's going to be some deviations.
That's like when Metallica says they're going to, you know, release something that gets back to their roots.
Right.
You know?
They're basically,
it's not going
to
happen.
This is damage control right now.
Yeah.
But the developer that they chose, I believe Activision is going to be publishing this thing, because they, of course, hold the rights to Bond, so they can do this if they want.
Mm-hmm.
But Eurocom, who's best known for a bunch of bad licensed games.
We got Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Who can forget Predator, Concrete Jungle, the biggest hit of 2005.
Yeah, and I have to mention, these guys did War Gods for the N64.
They did War Gods for the N64. And if you've never played War Gods, you really need to.
Oh, God. I remember that game. It was kind of like Tobal number one.
Right.
You know,
mixed with a little bit of Mortal Kombat.
Fatalities. I feel like in that generation, like the PSX, N64 generation, you needed to have a really shitty fighting game right out of the game.
Yep. Mace the Dark Age.
Yeah. Developer doesn't have a good track record at all.
Does this not set off alarms in your head? War Gods? I mean, granted, it was 10 years ago, but Predator Concrete Jungle was only 5 years ago.
Yeah, and what?
Ice Age 2, the Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. I mean, why can't we get Bungie on this or something?
Yeah.
Gosh.
I know. Well, you know, we're just going to have to keep our eyes open, and hopefully we'll have some good news to report. Hopefully it won't be like Sonic 4 Episode 1, and it won't be, you know, just total drudgery, just grim outlook on things.
Well, I mean, maybe they'll do a good move like Sega and just keep putting this off. Like, they're putting Sonic 4 off over and
like
over
again. Like Duke Nukem Forever? Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Speaking of Duke Nukem.
Yeah. Duke Nukem, the Manhattan Project, was released this week for Xbox Live Arcade.
It's for all you fans of the original Duke Nukem games when it was, you know, N-U-K-U-M.
Yeah.
The early PC side-scrolling games that later became, of course, the inspiration for Duke Nukem 3D.
Right. Yeah, it does pay homage to the original Duke games, which I was never really much of a fan
no,
of, to be honest.
Like we've talked before about the early PC platform games, most of them weren't very good. Duke Nukem really wasn't that good either, in my opinion, back then.
Yeah, but basically it's, 2D.
It's all about Commander Keen for me.
But it's 2D scrolling action, kind of like, you know, like the old Duke Nukem, like, you know, Contra style.
Which sounds like it would be great, like an updated, you know, Contra style Duke Nukem game. Yeah. That would sound like a good idea, right?
Sounds great.
But it's not.
Well, I wouldn't say, see, I haven't gotten a chance to actually play this, because guess what? My Xbox Red Ring.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, so.
Do Kinect's Red Ring?
Yeah, God, I hope not.
You just have to stand in place.
Yeah.
So Microsoft fixes it.
They sent it back a couple days ago, though, so hopefully I'll be getting it this weekend, and I can sink my teeth into this a little bit.
Maybe we'll have a little update for you.
Yeah.
Final word.
But you know what? From what I've read and what I've seen, it looks pretty good. It's not really my cup of tea. It kind of looks like a lot like another Xbox Live Arcade game, Shadow Complex.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've heard good things about that, actually.
It's a great game. It looks a lot like that, so I don't know. I'm holding out hope that it might not be terrible. It's only $10, too, so...
Can't we get Duke Nukem Time to Kill released on Xbox Live? Come on.
I want to just get the... I forget what it is, but the Duke Nukem, like, Master Collection or whatever. Oh, yeah. The 3D one. I can't remember what it is.
Master Levels.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Doom, I think.
Yeah. But anyway, also...
Atomic Pack.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that is what it was called, isn't it? Yeah, okay. But... Moving on, we also had another release this past week for Virtual Console, a game that we have actually reviewed on the show previously, Shadow of the Ninja for the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Just like Wild Guns last week, another Natsume game. I guess they're putting out Natsume games now. Just pumping them out, which is actually a good thing, because in the 8-bit and 16-bit eras, Natsume had a lot of great games, in my opinion. Shadow of the Ninja is another one of those.
Yeah.
I mean... Ninja Gaiden, that's a good game, but how about two-player co-op Ninja Gaiden? That's what this is.
Yeah, it's basically, it is just like an easier, slower Ninja Gaiden. That's really all Shadow of the Ninja is.
But it's got some cool moves, like I like the wall grappling. You can switch between, you know, top and bottom of the screen.
Yeah.
Bounce around on stuff, and I like that it has multiple weapons, too.
That's true,
because you've got your standard katana, which is, it works exactly like Ninja Gaiden's. But they also have, I think the name for it is like Kurosami or something like that. Yeah. But it's a ninja weapon where it's like a mace on a chain, kind of like a whip type thing.
Mm.
It works a little bit like the Castlevania whip, but it's got longer range, but when you're close up, it won't hurt enemies.
Right.
So there's a little strategic gameplay going on there.
A little strategery, but yeah, I mean, we gave it a good recommendation when we reviewed it, and I have to say, it still holds up. So.
Yeah, it's pretty lengthy, you know, worthwhile.
For a Nintendo game.
Yeah, NES game. It was released a little bit later, I think 1991 was when it came out. So the graphics are really good, and the slowdown isn't as bad as early NES games, and I think it holds up pretty well today.
Yeah.
Especially if, you know, like we've said before, ninja platformers. Who doesn't love that genre?
Exactly. So, yeah, Shadow of the Ninja. Pick it up if you have a Wii.
Right.
But anyway, we want to give a quick shout-out before ending this little retro news segment to a Flash game, actually. We don't usually talk about... You know, Flash games or internet happenings. Because really, I really don't give a shit about a lot of
the
memes.
It's difficult to keep up with all the Flash games that get released. You know, I'm not really interested in most of them. But this one is more of an oddity in a good way.
Yeah, it's basically Mario 1 for the Nintendo Entertainment System. It's called Super Mario Crossover. But you can play as 6 different characters. Mega Man, Samus, the guy from Contra.
The guy from Contra. Simon from Castlevania.
Yes, Simon
Link.
Yeah, and of course the original Mario. But it's pretty much like an exact copy of you know, the first Mario Brothers game. And it's pretty cool, though, too, because, like, you know, the characters you choose, it totally plays like they would in their own games.
Yeah, they control exactly like they would, even to the physics, the jumping, like, the jumping physics for Simon are just like Castlevania, which can make the game a little bit harder.
Yeah, I definitely, there is a kind of a discrepancy when it comes to difficulty, because Mega Man is by far the easiest character to control in this game. But yeah, it's great.
I'm down with the Contra guy myself. I mean,
spread shot.
It's pretty awesome to get the spread shot underground, stage 1-2,
yeah,
and just blow all the bricks away.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. Yeah, so Super Mario Crossover, it's
this
on
is,
Newgrounds.
This is the kind of thing companies should be doing.
Oh, yeah, if they put Super Mario Crossover on, like, a cart, I would definitely
buy
it. Yeah,
because, I mean, Super Mario 1, it's a great game, but we've all played it to death. Oh, I mean, yeah. I've played that game so much that I really have no use for
it. You can
it
get
anymore.
It for a penny.
Yeah,
pretty much anywhere.
It's not that it's not fun, it's just I've done everything I can do in the game, but when you...
Have you moonwalked, though?
Yes, I have. I've been to the minus world. I've done it all. All right. I've done it all. Used all the warps. But, no, it's just... It really just shoots more fun into the game. It makes it an almost entirely new game because you can play as freaking Mega Man.
Yeah, and
Mario.
I do like the ability to change your character every level. I thought that was a really good addition.
Yeah, just like Mario 2.
Right.
And I also really like how all the power-up system is just like Mario, but all the different characters get different power-ups corresponding to their games.
Yeah, like Mega Man gets a charge shot.
Yeah, if you're Mega Man you get a mushroom, you get charge shot.
Yeah.
If you're Samus and you get firepower, you get like the wave gun and she drops her suit.
Yeah. So yeah, it's pretty interesting, but that's on Newgrounds.com. Mm-hmm.
Definitely check it out.
Yeah, for sure. Time to get into the meat and potatoes of the show, the main course, peripherals, the good, the bad, the ugly.
The word I couldn't pronounce when I was 7 years old. I would have to just say accessories. Like peripherals? Peripherals.
Yeah, I want to start this off by, well,
peripherals.
Yeah, I don't think we need to explain what peripherals are.
Right.
Anyone who listens to the show who grew up in the 80s or the 90s mm-hmm. has seen some god-awful peripherals.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not talking about the Guitar Hero guitar.
No.
I'm not talking about the Kinect. I'm talking about legitimately bad things that did not work.
Yeah.
Terrible products that they did not live up to their namesake at all.
Right. I mean, you know, developers having a bad idea, which then translates into bad reality, because they don't even work right.
Yeah. And, you know, this is before we had all the consumer protections we have now for the video game industry, or at least before the consumer awareness.
Right.
But let's start off with, I think, my favorite bad peripheral. We're going to do bad first, because... The bad ones are just so much more fun to talk
about. Yeah, who doesn't want to skewer bad things?
Yeah, really? Exactly.
Especially in video games. There's
so
many crazy ideas.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to talk about the Atari Mind Link.
Oh, yeah. This is my... Oh, God. It's my favorite. I can't believe that something like this was thought up to begin with, and then that they actually developed it put time into it, effort, develop games for it. I mean, they didn't release the Atari Mind Link, but wasn't for lack of trying.
No, the Atari Mind Link basically looks like a headband, and it works by reading your head muscle movements. So you have to make the muscles in your head move around.
Right.
In correspondence with what you want the game to do.
Yeah.
And then these movements are supposedly read by infrared sensors. The best thing is, like, if you read, like, the product testing for this, like, most people, I think it was, like, 80% said that it caused headaches.
Yeah, because you're moving your head muscles around all the time. It's, like, concentrating really hard.
Yeah, God, like, how the hell do you even do that? Like, just moving your jaw?
I to put this in a more modern context, imagine if you're playing, like, Gears of War, and every time you wanted to go into cover, you, like, twitched your right eyebrow a little bit.
Yeah.
And you had to do that every single time. And also make sure that you weren't moving your head muscles around. Because then, obviously, it wouldn't work. There was two games developed for this. The first was Bind Breakthrough, which was a breakout clone.
Of course, yeah.
But now you're controlling it with your eyebrows and your forehead, so it's totally awesome and different. And then the second game, which is really interesting to me, Mind Maze, which, you know, when you think of that first, you're like, oh, this is going to be freaking cool, man. Controlling a game with my brain called Mind Maze, it's going to be totally immersive and interactive. It's actually, if you recall the beginnings of the Ghostbusters movie where he's showing the guy the cards and shocking him every time he doesn't pick the right card, you know. The idea is that this is the first game utilizing ESP abilities in human beings, which of course was just a marketing ploy.
Yeah,
but
you know, I mean, the overall message though is that this thing didn't work, and that's why it didn't get released. It was so touchy, so unresponsive. You know what? Actually, it reminds me of I saw a news story a few years back about this guy who he was a paraplegic, I believe, couldn't move like pretty much anything from the neck down, and they set it up so that he could play solitaire on the computer with his mind. So we actually have this technology right now.
Right.
We actually have the Atari Mind Link technology, and it would work. But apparently game companies aren't interested. I think that'd be great. I mean, fuck the Kinect. Let's just...
Yeah, I forget about the Kinect, man. I want Atari to re-release the Mind Link. I want to watch two people playing Super Street Fighter 4, not saying a word and just staring at each other really intently and moving their, you know, their eyebrows around, blinking.
I think that would add, like, a whole new level to, like, I don't know how that would work. Like, would you blame your fuck-ups on, like, a fleeting thought? I don't know. Like, it's just like, oh, sorry, man, my grandma just died. Yeah, I can't think straight right now.
Right. Is it to go, I don't know why I keep thinking Ghostbusters of this, but, you know, clear your mind, clear your thoughts. Don't think of anything. We think of J. Edgar Hoover. He'll appear in the game and destroy us.
Yeah, I mean, it would be great if they actually utilized that technology, but unfortunately... Game companies aren't interested, and it's probably because of the Atari Mind Link, honestly.
Yeah, I can't really blame him. I mean, this has got to be the most fucked up, stupid idea I've ever heard for a peripheral.
And plus, this is like 1982, you know?
Yeah.
Like 1981, 1982.
Yeah, this was planned for an 84 release, but as Drew said, they couldn't work out all the kinks, of which there were many. And also, of course, there was the video game crash, so I don't think anyone wanted to use Mind Link after that.
Yeah.
Although, maybe this could have saved Atari, you know? Maybe it could have saved video games.
If it worked, it could have.
Maybe Nintendo would have went along a completely different path.
Well, I guess that's one for the history books. Maybe we'll have some alternate Bizarro history episode, or what it would be like if Atari won instead of Nintendo.
Right. We'd all be playing games with their mind, man. ESP.
All right, well, moving on. Another favorite of mine in the bad peripheral department, the Sega Activator. Now, if you don't know what this is, it's basically an octagon that you put on your floor. It's probably about, what, maybe 4 inches tall, something like that.
Yeah.
But what it does is it has 8 different quadrants. It
looks like a teleporter pad.
Yeah, it looks like a teleporter pad, and it shoots up infrared rays to your ceiling, basically encasing you in this octagon of infrared.
Right.
So the idea is that if you punch or kick into a certain quadrant, then that will control your character right. on the screen. This was designed, you know, for fighting games like right. Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, all the rest.
Doesn't this sound just like a great idea, guys? I mean, because I know I can punch, kick, do windmill spin jumps, mm-hmm. Backflips, sweep kicks, mm-hmm. all of that. I know I can do that a lot faster than pressing A, B, and C. I don't yeah. know about you, but that's yeah. just me.
You know, actually,
maybe I'm a little more athletic than everyone else, but
I was reading about this, and this guy actually worked out what you'd have to do a Hadouken in Street Fighter 2. He's like, you have to punch back, kick forward within, like, the first 2 seconds, and then punch forward and punch into another quadrant, right. like, all in the span of 5 seconds. So you'd be looking like a fucking idiot, flailing around yeah. in your living room in this fucking octagon thing. And you know what? The thing is, it would be, you know, less hilarious if it actually worked, but it didn't right. work.
Yeah.
Of course it didn't
work. No, it didn't work. I don't know. This brings to mind, like, all these other peripherals that don't work to me. And I just as a child, when I would, you know, get the chance to use one of them and then realize, oh, this one doesn't work either.
Yeah.
Be like, where are they testing these things? Is it, like, a bunker 500 miles below the Earth's surface? Is that where the Sega Activator will actually activate?
Yeah.
Or what? Because all the rules that they give you, I love the Activator training video.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, assemble the panels in this order, and it's giving you a mathematical equation.
Yeah.
And then it's telling you standard ceiling height only.
Oh, yeah, you have to have a low, flat ceiling.
What is a standard ceiling height?
No, it's got to be a low ceiling. And the funniest thing about it is that it specifically warns against mirrored ceilings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, is Rico Suave right. one of these? Like, what yeah. kind of, you know,
so
penthouse
you know,
king has a right, Sega Activator?
You know, you're not going to be able to set up the Activator in your sex room.
Yeah.
You know, to impress the ladies. Play, mm-hmm. play a little Eternal Champions mm-hmm. before you, you know, bang them. So
it was just ridiculous.
And I also love the training video where it's showing, like, this super cool dude just, like, doing all these crazy martial arts moves while this guy next to him has the basic controller and is, like, looking at it like, what? I don't get it. Why am I losing? Like, as if that would ever actually happen.
Yeah.
Because, trust me, the controller is a better way to go with fighting games than kicking and punching the air.
For sure. All right. Well, yeah, we've talked about the Sega Activator, the Atari Mind Link, but I want to move on to a more infamous accessory, mm-hmm. right. peripheral, if you will, the Rob/Power Glove.
Oh yeah!
Both for the Nintendo.
Robotic operating buddy.
Yeah. we'll talk about the Rob first. The Rob, it kind of looked like Wall-E, Pixar movie, and his basic. He had two functions: picking mm-hmm. up things and moving them side to side.
Right.
Or three functions. He could also move them down. I'm sorry.
Okay. I think his eyes blink too.
Yeah. it only worked with two games.
Gyromite and Stack Up.
Yeah. So it was pretty much useless.
Right. But the interesting thing about the ROB, though, unlike all these other bad peripherals, this was a pack-in.
Yeah.
The Nintendo Entertainment System, because when Nintendo came out, you had two options. You could get the standard system for, you know, all us lame poor kids that only had the Zapper, a controller, and Super Mario Duck Hunt. But if you got the deluxe package, if you were cool enough, you could get your own robot. And that came with Gyromite and Stack Up. But I don't know, the ROB, obviously Nintendo didn't really intend for this to continue on because they didn't make anything else for it.
Yeah.
It was more just like a pack-in to, you know, wow Americans. Be like, oh, this isn't just a video game system. We've got a robot with it.
Yeah.
You know, like, kind of a lot of other Japanese toys, like that robotic dog that was popular for a while.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it reminds me of. So, I mean, it's a bad peripheral, but it's actually a pretty good marketing scheme.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, as a kid, when you go to a store, you're used to Atari and, you know, ColecoVision or whatever, and you see a video game system with a freaking robot that works, you know, and you're five, that's pretty awesome. You're probably going to want your parents to buy it. And that's pretty much what Nintendo used ROB for.
And the Power Glove kind of had a similar effect, because, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I thought the Power Glove was cool. Because, you know, you just, It's a power glove, you know? Yeah. It's a badass glove with a bunch of buttons on it.
It looks like a, you know, your video game battle gauntlet. Yeah. When you put it on, you're going to turn into, like, a mech and kick everyone's ass.
Yeah, but of course, you know, I don't think we really have to talk too much about the power glove. Everybody knows that the power glove is total bullshit.
Right, right. Yeah,
it's never worked, and if you can get it to work, you are some kind of video game genius.
Yeah. This is another one of those peripherals, you know, like most of these where you saw it and you're like, whoa, that's awesome. And then as soon as one of your rich friends bought one and you got to play with it, you just laughed it off and were glad that you didn't beg your parents to buy it. I mean, who doesn't want to enter in, you know, 20-digit code to play a game?
Yeah.
Because that's what all the, you know, all those additional buttons on the side of the power glove, and you're like, oh man, that's going to make me super good at video games. Actually, that was just to enter in the stupid codes to interact with the games, which still didn't work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I want to flick my thumb to get Simon to flick his whip in Castlevania. Why not?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, we've seen what Nintendo has done now with the Wii controller. Yeah. It's kind of interesting. It's an interesting parallel, I guess.
It was good of them to include an actual controller on the glove, which, you know, because the glove itself didn't work.
Yeah, so. After you got frustrated and right. I had no other recourse.
Yeah.
Fuck it, man. I'm just it's going to play it like regular
controller. Even Mattel, you know. The intelligent developer of Intellivision knew that they needed an actual controller out of it because the glove didn't work. Great stuff, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, the power glove, man. Everyone's heard about it. I don't really think there's any point in discussing it more.
We've got better things to talk about, like vibrators.
Yeah, and, well, you know, this next segment's for the ladies, all right? Yeah.
Turn those lights down low, get some smooth jams playing. Got those lights down. Got those smooth, slow jams playing. Little Genuine, maybe. Something like that. Ride the pony. Because it's time to talk about the Trance Vibrator, which was developed for Rez, which is a really good, actually, Dreamcast game.
Yeah, and PS2.
Yeah. It was later re-released for PS2, like a lot of Dreamcast games were.
Yeah, I think the Trance Vibrator is actually only for PS2, though. I'm not entirely sure about that.
Oh, okay.
But it's a Japanese peripheral, and basically, it just vibrates to the music, because Rez has, you know, pretty thumping house techno
music. And the music in Rez is integrated into the game, to where, you know, you play along to the music while you're playing the game. But, yeah, the Trance Vibrator, it's essentially a ultra-powerful DualShock, really. And it's just like the Rumble Pack or the, you know, the DualShock technology, but it's a peripheral.
Mm-hmm.
And it curiously comes in its own little, you know, nondescript pouch, just like some other things I can think of that vibrate and come in, you know, suede pouches.
Yeah, the Trance Vibrator basically became famous just because people were using it to masturbate with. And it's pretty funny. I can't imagine that the developers didn't see this coming.
Right, because, I mean, there's things like this out on the market for PC, like USB vibrators and things of that sort.
Yeah.
This is kind of the same thing, really.
Yeah. There's not really that much to say about it, but yeah, it was designed, you know, so, like, yeah. I think I was reading that the developers originally thought that you should sit on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't want my ass to be vibrating to techno music, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Rez is a good game. Let's not gay it up, guys.
Yeah.
Create an ass dildo for it.
Yeah, there's not. Yeah, there's really not much.
No, I mean, yeah, it didn't. It doesn't. You know, it's not really that interesting beyond the masturbatory possibilities.
Yeah, but let's move on to something that is absolutely terrible.
Oh yeah, the most badass peripheral I can think of, man. I mean, you wanna really get into the game? Konami's got your back. Because it's time to slap on the laser scope on your dome and yell, fire, fire, fire.
Yeah, the laser scope is kind of looks a little bit like the Atari Mind Link. It's like a headband and it has a little, you know, visor type screen thing that goes over one eye.
And it's also kind of like the Xbox headset because you can plug it into the audio port of the NES and it'll play the, you know, the game sounds and music through an actual speaker.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, the laser scope is infamous for, you know, well, number one, not working. Of course, you know, that's a hallmark of any
I mean, that's the thing when we're talking about all these peripherals. It's amazing to me because, I mean, every company really is guilty of coming out with one of these things. We got Mattel that came out, you know, with the Power Glove, like we said. Nintendo obviously had ROB, and they had a hand in the Power Glove themselves. The Sega Activator, Atari Mind Link, Konami Laser Scope. None of these things freaking worked.
Yeah.
And I just, like, it blows. I mean, we get nostalgic on this show, talk about the past in a good way. This is like the dark ages, you know, peripherals. Because a lot of bad peripherals now, it's all third-party companies, you know, Chinese companies just pumping these things out, crappy controllers and things of the like. But these were actual legitimate game companies coming out with things that didn't work.
Yeah.
And the laser scope was another one of those.
Yeah, you had to use voice commands, which was the funniest thing about it, because who wants to just, like, sit around and yell something for the fire button, you know? And you could yell anything. You didn't have to yell fire. You could yell shit, fuck. I mean, I think the Angry Video Game Nerd
he highlighted that fact, yeah. And the other thing about this is, since it was voice activated, if you were in a room where there was other noises going on around you, again, it wouldn't work, because any noise that it would detect, it would do the commands on the screen.
Right.
And I really like the game that this was created. Well, the game was created to go along with this. Laser Invasion. Laser Invasion! It's a good name for an indie band or something.
Yeah. Yeah, the laser scope. And it looks so dorky, too.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah, you look like a complete dumbass with this thing on. Yeah, the little, like, targeting reticle that went over your eye.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's really gonna fucking help anything.
Yeah. Oh, what was the tiger thing that had that? Oh, God. The headband, like, it had, like, basically the same thing, but you'd actually, like, see these little, like, Game & Watch style graphics. I can't remember the hell
it
was.
If you ever want to talk about Tiger, we'll have to do a whole show about it, and we'll need some hard drugs.
Maybe someone can send us an email and remind me what that was called. I can't not remember. I had one, though. And it was,
I had a lot of Tiger products, unfortunately. That mainly came from my, you know, relatives during Christmas time and stuff. Oh, he likes video games. He's gonna love Double Dragon LCD handheld.
Oh God, thanks, I remember,
Grandma.
I remember those. Man, those LCD games are fucking horrible. Yeah. I can't like even imagine, because, you know, back in the early 80s, like, that was a big deal. Like, these little, like, LCD, because
there were no
games.
Portable games back then. So.
Yeah. I don't know, but I don't want to get too lost in that. Yeah,
but anyway, the laser scope, the other thing about that game, the Laser Invasion game I was talking about, I really like that you could just use the zapper with it, a peripheral that actually worked. Mm-hmm. So obviously everyone was just going to do that and throw their laser scope in their toy box, which, you know, I'm sure thousands upon thousands of toy boxes across America were littered with bad peripherals like this.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I mean, I remember opening up some of my video game stuff much later on and finding my acclaimed wireless NES controllers, which I got from my grandma and thought was a, you know, a very thoughtful present until I plugged in and realized the only way that it worked was if you pointed it at exactly the right angle, exactly the right level to, you know, the infrared sensor thing. And if you deviated at all from that, like if you moved your hand slightly angled to the left or the right, it wouldn't work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Completely useless, just like all these other peripherals. But here's a more useful peripheral
that we've talked about before. It's somewhat related. Instead of you having to voice the commands, this just goes ahead and it'll just read the text of the game for you.
Yeah, the IntelliVoice is gonna... we talked about the IntelliVoice on the Intellivision retrospective episode, but yes, the IntelliVoice...
It has to be included.
It's gonna do all the work for you, man.
Yeah, this is...
You don't even have to read anymore. Yep. Energy ball!
This is truly... I mean, you know, this is one of the, like, earliest peripherals, I would say.
IntelliVision actually had a bunch of... you know, early strange add-ons and peripherals. Yeah,
so I guess there's some level of forgiveness because, you know, they didn't know any better.
Right, and also there was no technology to include digitized voices on carts yet or anything like that. So, you know, it kind of makes sense that they would come out with it, but obviously it's really stupid and useless when you look at it today. And even back then, I can't really see many people getting that hyped on it. I mean, great. It's reading off a couple things in the game.
Yeah, it just reads off the title of the game in a computerized voice.
B-17 Bomber.
Yeah, that's pretty much all it does.
But I really now, now that we're talking about all these peripherals and I'm remembering them all, I want to link up the IntelliVoice with the laser scope. Yeah. Have it shout out commands for me. It's the ultimate laziness.
Yeah, of course.
Right there.
But moving on, this next one I want to talk about is kind of along the same lines as the Sega Activator.
Yeah. But came much later, so it's even less forgivable.
Much later. I think this is for PS2, actually.
Yes, it was.
Ultimate Kickboxing.
Which you
can get now for a penny.
Mm-hmm. And it's from Naki.
Yeah.
We've never fucking heard of.
Ultimate Kickboxing is basically, it's, you know, a power pad type thing. Or no, wait, sorry. You strap things to your wrists and ankles, like little sensors. And then with these sensors, you punch and kick, and the game is supposed to recognize your movements.
Right. And, I mean, this was created for PS2, where we're getting into 3D fighting games, which have even more complex motions and more obviously ways to move around within the game field than the 2D games. If you think the Sega Activator didn't work, where it's just, you know, punch to hit A, you know, kick to go up, this is never going to work. How are you going to, you know, recreate digital analog control and like 8 different buttons with some shit that you strap on your ankles and wrists?
Yeah.
I mean, how did anyone think that would actually work?
Yeah, like I said, it doesn't work.
No.
And, I really just want to buy one of these just to experience it. You know, because I've only been able to read about it, unfortunately. But, yeah, just like, you know, little sensors on your wrists and your ankles. Try, you know, punch, do a Hadouken. No dice. Of course.
Yeah, and you know, we've talked about all these bad peripherals, and we're going to talk about one more here, but yeah, I can't believe these companies have come out with this stuff. I mean, who wants to pay... Some of these peripherals are ridiculously
really
priced.
Expensive.
I mean, you know...
At least when they came out.
Yeah, who wants to pay, you know, like $80 for a Konami laser scope or whatever, just to cripple yourself in the game? Because the only thing this is good for is if you're really good at a game, trying to play it and see if you could do anything with them.
Yeah.
So that's the only use any of these things had. Because obviously, like we said, they didn't ever fucking work right. None of them did.
Speaking of something that never worked, ever.
No.
In the history of video games, I can't imagine that this ever worked with anyone. The U-Force.
For
the Nintendo. My God, it looks like a laptop, basically. Like a little small laptop.
Yeah, or electronic battleship.
Yeah. And you basically just put your hands over the two screens. There's one, you know, where the keyboard would be if you think about a laptop. Yeah. One where the screen would be, obviously.
This is a portable Sega Activator.
Yeah. You just, like, you move your hands, and that's supposed to somehow register on the...
There's supposed to be, again, you know, infrared sensors. That's there's a good buzzword that you should call from your childhood. Infrared. All these things use infrared and none of them work.
Yeah.
U-Force is another one of those. You're supposed to, you know, do your cool hand motions over
within
the screen.
Like, yeah, within like maybe a 6-inch not 6 inches, but maybe like 10-inch radius.
Right.
You know, like you just had this like little small thing. You're supposed to like, you know, move your hands over it and somehow what, like, control it.
I mean, this is NES era. What games are coming out then that would even ever work properly or that this would actually, you know,
yeah, what would
behoove
warrant,
you to use?
Yeah, what would warrant this? I don't understand. But actually, it came with a flight stick, though.
Oh, okay.
And even if you put the flight stick in, though, it still doesn't work. Of course.
Yeah, I don't know. I watched the commercial for this. And it reminded me of all these bad peripherals. They would always feature Mike Tyson's punch out so they could show the kid, like, punching. It's like, yeah, I'm sure you're going to be able to KO Mike Tyson with a U-Force or a power glove. Good. If you can actually do that, you might as well just stop playing video games because there's no challenge out there for you.
Exactly. Yeah, the U-Force, if anyone out there has one of these and actually can get it to work, I would love to hear from you. Because everything I've heard is, you know...
I'm sure that you have to build your own, like, geodesic dome to encase your U-Force in, and then it might actually work. Bounce all the lasers off, like, 10 different mirrors, maybe.
Well, you know, talked about the bad peripherals.
Yeah, and I'm getting depressed.
Yeah, and there are a lot. Like, there are seriously a lot that we couldn't fit in all of the terrible peripherals.
We haven't even scratched the surface.
Yeah, but we did want to, you know, make this not such a grim episode. Talk a little bit about some of the best peripherals ever.
Some of our more fondly remembered peripherals. And obviously, in anybody who's played, you know, was around in the 80s or early 90s, or any retro gamer, the most fondly remembered peripheral, in my opinion, is always going to be the Game Genie.
Of course, yeah. I mean, the Game Genie was cool just because it basically let you hack your games.
Yes.
It allowed you to do pretty much whatever you wanted in the game, like jump as high as you want, have as many lives as you want. Yeah. Fire as much as you want, take as much damage as you want. You know, it was a genius idea.
Oh, yeah. And it's such a genius idea that it pissed Nintendo off to the extreme, to the point where they sued the makers of the Game Genie, Galoob. They tried to sue them to take it off the market. And I remember this being one of the earliest huge gaming controversies that I can recall. Because it was really funny, but, you know, back then people had a different concept of video games. Not so much today where everyone's like, yeah, man, I'm real good at blah, blah, blah. I mean, you have that with online, but not really at home. But with the Game Genie, it was a huge controversy because it let you cheat so much at games. And Nintendo hated it. They didn't want people to cheat at games. I guess their rationale there was, oh, if people can just, you know, plug their game into Game Genie and beat it in 1 hour, they're not going to buy games anymore. Yeah, they're just going to rent them or something.
It is a really short-sighted thing, too, because, yeah, you know,
it really was, and that's why Nintendo did not win their lawsuit. I mean, they had people testifying on there saying, this is cheating young gamers out of the full experience. Mm. This is teaching them that you can get ahead by cheating and lying. Like,
well,
I mean, they really were being that overdramatic about it. And it's like, guys, this is just video games. Yeah. It's just another way to have fun with it. And that's what the Game Genie was.
This is sending a bad message to society.
Yeah, really. That was their argument.
Yeah.
But really, it was just Nintendo pissed off, probably because they didn't think of this first or something, mm-hmm. I'd imagine. But yeah, the Game Genie was a great peripheral. Of course, it came out for a lot of different systems, but the classic NES Game Genie is the one that everyone fondly remembers.
Yeah. But speaking about this era, there's another pretty good peripheral. I wouldn't say it's like the best peripheral.
It's definitely
for
not
the Sega
best.
Master System, but the 3D glasses for the Sega Master System were actually, for its time, they were pretty cool. Yeah.
I mean, like Drew said, not the best peripheral, but even compared to the Virtual Boy, this is better.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Because, you know, it's pretty cool, especially in the late, you know, mid to late 80s. Playing with these and seeing, like, the pixels jump off the screen. Because they really do. It really does make them pop out off the screen. You know, it's a kind of a cheap effect. But it actually works, unlike the majority of the peripherals that we've talked about today. And it's a cool little diversion. The couple games that came out for it, like Zaxxon 3D and Missile Defense 3D. Those are all pretty cool, simple little games that worked with it. I really like the 3D glasses.
Yeah, and I mean, they're also insanely cheap if you want to actually buy one today. You probably get it for a penny.
Yeah, well, the original ones are still kind of pricey because of the collectability of them, obviously.
Yeah.
But there's actually third-party 3D glasses that you can buy for Sega Master System that I think are like $5 or $10.
Yeah.
And they'll work the same exact way.
Yeah. So yeah, the 3D glasses for Master System.
If you have a Master System, I really feel like you need these things. If nothing else, just for the kish value and the fact that they actually work and are kind of fun.
Yeah, it's definitely an overlooked peripheral. And it really, it didn't make it past the Master System. They never tried to do that with the Genesis or anything like that.
And this is much like what we're going to talk about next. Another Sega peripheral that really was only for, you know, one or two games. And well, in this case, one game.
Yeah, one game. But it was worth it. It
was cool and was worth it. The twin sticks for Virtual On.
Yeah, on the Dreamcast. Or was it Saturn? It was Dreamcast, wasn't it?
Saturn, actually, yes.
Oh, God.
I think they had a version for Saturn, or for Dreamcast, too, but we're talking about the Saturn version here.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Virtual On Twin Sticks. If you don't know what Virtual On is, it's a arena 3D mech fighting game, basically.
Yeah, it's also on the arcade.
Yes.
If you get a chance to play. We went to Nickel World a while ago and played Virtual On. And, it's a pretty fun game. I mean, if you like mechs and fighting, then sure.
Obviously, you know, the graphics and all that are pretty dated, but the gameplay still holds up really well.
Mm.
And with the twin sticks, this game, I really can't imagine playing this game on a Saturn gamepad. It probably wouldn't even work. I don't know.
I mean, twin sticks are basically, it's just, you know, two joysticks. That's all it is.
Because the idea of the game is you utilize these sticks to move your mech around. So you push one stick forward to propel them while you push another one sideways to get them to move in, you know, left or right or diagonal. And that's what they're for.
Yeah. But it definitely added to the game experience, which is what any good peripheral should do, arguably. Right.
I mean, this is basically like if you're way into Street Fighter and King of Fighters, you're going to want to buy an arcade stick because that's really the proper way to control those games. Mm-hmm. It's always going to work a little bit better than a D-pad. And that's what these are. It's the same concept. If you want to be a true badass at Virtual On, you're going to need those twin sticks, man.
Of course.
Just going to have to.
All right, well, moving on. I want to talk about one of the most ridiculously expensive big peripherals ever.
But probably the most ridiculously cool peripheral ever, in my opinion, anyway.
The Steel Battalion controller for the Xbox. Basically, it's it's basically like a desk, is the best way I can describe it. It's like a desk. It's what you would expect to see from the inside of a mech. It's like a command center, you know? You got two control sticks, 40-something buttons, foot pedals,
You got it all.
It's fucking huge, and it costs $200 when
lights,
it came out.
It lights up.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. It costs $200 though.
Yeah.
For a to be used with a $50 game.
Right. But it's a good game.
It is.
Yeah. And this control setup. Come on, Capcom. I love you for coming out with this. It reminds me of the Simpsons episode where Homer is at the faux radioactive panel and somehow he causes a nuclear meltdown anyway. Yeah. Still, I feel like you could probably do that with the Steel Battalion controller. Be careful. You may cause, combined with the original Xbox, that huge beast, there might be a nuclear explosion in your future if you utilize this the wrong way. Use it for good, not evil.
The Steel Battalion controller, it's just ridiculous. I can't imagine actually ordering this on the internet.
What's the shipping?
Yeah, the shipping would have to be almost half the price. Like, yeah. It's, I'm pretty curious as to how much one of these actually weighs.
Yeah, this is one of those things where if you're into video games, even though it's obviously excessive and ludicrous, and there's no way that they made money on this.
Oh,
it just
God,
isn't.
No.
This was just a crazy Japanese developer who was like, this is what I want to do. I want a mech game where you have a mech panel. You know, but despite all that, you gotta love them for coming out with this. I mean, who can't love a peripheral with a windshield wiper button on it?
Yeah. it's just fucking ridiculous.
And an eject button, which is encased under plastic, so you have to flip it out. Yeah. Are you sure you want to eject from your virtual mech? make sure you wipe the windshield first before you do that.
I mean, it's definitely an immersive experience. I just wouldn't expect to get laid if you had this laying around your apartment.
Although I did see a cool video where somebody was VJing with the controller, the Steel Battalion controller. Like, he's flipping all the buttons. Yeah, instead of scratching records, he was like hitting the eject button and moving the sticks around.
It'd be a pretty good prop piece, for a band or something.
Yeah.
Especially like an electronic band.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's,
shit, maybe we should start a mech themed electronic band. Who knows? Right.
Team mech. But, we're going to move on from the excessive into something that was actually a very simple idea.
Yeah. The Game Boy camera and printer. The Game Boy camera, when it came out, I really never saw any reason to buy it.
No.
I didn't think it was
a great idea
at all.
I have to say, the majority of these peripherals I never owned. Because I was a smart enough kid to know that a laser scope or a power glove just wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, I was more concerned with games,
right,
personally.
But this is actually, unlike those, a good idea, because, I mean, back then, we didn't have cell phone cameras.
Right.
Really. We didn't have, like, little portable printers.
Yeah.
Especially not on a mass consumer level. Yeah. So the Game Boy camera is a pretty cool idea.
And, it's not a good quality at all.
No.
It's super pixelated, sepia tones. The printer wasn't very good either, but hey, Neil Young used it for an album cover. So.
Yeah. And now it's a real oddity because you have to go through a lot of work to get, like the proper paper that'll work with it and stuff on the secondary market. If you actually want to use your Game Boy camera beyond, some college art kids project or something,
I mean,
see why you'd want to use it.
The artistic value is kind of cool. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I think like if I saw one in, like, a store for, maybe, like, $10 or $20, I'd probably buy it.
Right.
Sure, why
this
not?
This was sort of like, Mario Paint with the Super Nintendo mouse. Like, they came out with a cheap option for people who couldn't afford, similar things like this that were probably, at the time, like, hundreds upon hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
So they offered it, to the kids, give them something to play around with. Pretty cool idea. It's unlike these other peripherals, though, it wasn't very useful with the actual games.
Oh, no. It wasn't meant for games at all.
Right,
it was actually just meant to, make your Game Boy into a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Give it a secondary use.
But kind of like the Super Game Boy that we've talked about before, it's a simple idea from Nintendo that worked out pretty well.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, moving on to our last peripheral.
Mm-hmm. This is the what the hell section.
Yeah, it's kind of an oddity. It's kind of like the Steel Battalion controller, actually. It's the NEC Power Console.
Mm-hmm.
This is released for the TurboGrafx.
Or PC Engine.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. And Yeah, it
this is actually intended to plug in with the Super Graphics, actually, which is later, you know, because we haven't talked about the Turbo extensively yet, but it had a lot of different iterations over the years because it came out so early. Right. They tried to update, you know, the graphic technology on it over and over again.
Yeah, the NEC Power Console, it actually is pretty similar to Steel Battalion. It's probably about, what, like 3 feet by 2 mm-hmm. and a half feet.
It looks a lot like when you were a child and your parents bought you one of those, like, little plastic driving things.
Yeah.
You know, or plastic, like, plane console things so you could play pretend. It looks a lot like that to me.
Yeah, it's it has a joystick or a flight stick, whatever you want to call it. It has a digital clock, a numeric keypad.
Ooh.
And, you know, it has all the bells and whistles, like, you know, lights and whatever.
Right.
And it works on all PC Engine games, actually. It's not just for a few games.
Yeah.
It technically, I don't know how well, but it works on all PC Engine games.
If you want to play Super Bonk's Adventure with this, I don't know how well that would work.
Yeah. But yeah, Japanese only. It didn't really have much of a lifespan. I think there's only like 2 games released for it, and I can't remember what they were off the top of my head.
Yeah,
but
I mean, this was released much later in the Turbo and PC Engine's life, where really only people in Japan cared about it anymore.
Yeah, but it's definitely an interesting oddity in the world of peripherals, mm-hmm. and it's one that many people don't really know about.
Yeah,
it's actually really hard to find information about.
Yeah,
on this.
I actually didn't know about this until you told me about it.
Yeah, there's only like existed. I could only find like I think 2 web pages that really talked about this extensively.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, so it's really obscure. I don't know.
Probably for good reason, though.
I don't know. Well, hey, if you're ever in Akihabara and you stumble across an NEC Power Console,
see a big gray plastic, ugly looking thing with a huge like flight yoke sticking out of it.
Yeah, pick it up and email us. I'd love to hear how it actually works. But, well, I think that about wraps it up for our peripherals episode.
Yeah.
We've went through mostly bad, but some of the good games.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's hard to find good, though. It really is.
Yeah, and as
beyond, you know, basic controllers, you know, the Hori arcade stick.
Mm-hmm.
You have, like, things like that that are really awesome, but...
The Evil Dead chainsaw.
Right.
Yeah, so there's a lot more bad than good, and I feel like the good peripherals are more well-known.
Mm-hmm.
They're more in our lexicon, I guess you could say. Like, you know, obviously the good peripherals, we have Guitar Hero today, the whole Rock Band thing.
Uh-huh.
But the bad ones are just so much fun to talk
about. I'd much rather talk about the bad. Let's give the laser scope its just due.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, but that wraps it up. Thank you for listening to this episode of Pixel Dreams. Tune in next week or the week after that, and we will have a brand new episode for you.
Got a lot on the docket coming up here.
Yeah.
A lot of ideas kicking around.
A lot of great ideas kicking around our heads, you know. So check in next week for the next episode of Pixel
Games. We're actually going to talk about games next week. So
I swear, we are going to talk about games.